You're listening to the Hour of the Time. I'm William Cooper. Now, I told you the other night, folks, that the BBS would be up here at its number at the Research Center, and it is. Some people have already called and logged on. Now, if you have any problems with getting arbitrarily disconnected or anything like that, make sure you call us. Tell us the time you called, what happened. And if we're having any interference on our phone lines or the BBS line, I will personally rake GTE over the coals. So far, it looks like everything is operating perfectly. The number for the BBS is 602-337-2592. That's 602-337-2592. It's on that number now. It's online. Has been for most of the afternoon. 602-337-2592. If you are not a member of CAGI or the Intelligence Service, you can log on, but you'll only be able to look around. You won't be able to do anything or download anything or leave any messages. But you can look around and see what it's all about, and it might help you decide whether or not you want to join. Now remember, memberships are open again. Individual memberships in the Intelligence Service are $100. Family membership for your whole family, irregardless of how many members there are in your family, is $150. Individual memberships, $100. Family membership, $150. Remember that our convention is coming up the first 5 days of August, or actually it's the first 5 days of August, 1st through the 5th. That's correct. 1st through the 5th of August. And if you want to reserve your spot now, send us $100 if you are a CAGI or Intelligence Service member. $100. If you are an Intelligence Service member with a family membership and you want to bring your whole family, the fee for the 5 days is $150. Anyone else, if you're not a member of CAGI or the Intelligence Service, it's $250 per person. There are no discounts. There are no family rates. $250 per person. Now remember, we have a sale going on now, folks, and you want to take advantage of this, I guarantee you. The treason papers are on sale, $58 for CAGI members, $68 for everybody else. $58 for CAGI members, $68 for everybody else. All the audio tapes from 1993 are on sale. And I forgot what the price is. Do you remember, Carolyn? It's $4 for CAGI members and $5 for everybody else for any of the audio tapes from 1993. That tone you hear in the background is somebody logging on to the BBS. Didn't take long. Okay, now that pertains only to audio tapes from 1993. And the only reason they're going on sale, folks, is because at the end of this month, we are retiring the master tapes for all of the programs of the Hour of the Time that were aired in 1993, and they will no longer be available. So if you're going to wait and get them later, you're not going to get them later because they won't be available later. At the end of this month, we're retiring the master tapes for all of the broadcasts of the Hour of the Time for 1993. If you want to get any of those tapes, get them now. Order them now. The price for CADGI members is $4. That's post-paid, folks. And for anybody else, $5 post-paid. Also, we sat down last night and came up with a sale price for the Babylon, Mystery Babylon series. The entire series, folks, includes the Luxor videotape. For CADGI members, $180. Now, that's 142 tapes, audio tapes, plus the Luxor videotape. For CADGI members, $180. It's 41 or 42 tapes. I don't remember exactly, but it's one of those two numbers. Audio tapes of the hour of the time. That's that many hours, folks. Plus the videotape of the Luxor. For non-CADGI members, it's $210. For non-CADGI members, it's $210. Now remember, if you live outside of the borders of the United States of America, you have to add additional postage. Okay? And it would be best if you call us and find out what that is. But for the Mystery Babylon series, I'll tell you right now. For foreign CADGI members, if you live outside the borders of the United States and you're a CADGI member, it's $210 for the Mystery Babylon series. If you live outside the borders of the United States and you're not a CADGI member, it's $240 for the Mystery Babylon series. It costs us an awful lot to ship something first class to someone outside the borders of the United States, and so we have to tag on that extra cost. Remember, my book, Behold a Pale Horse, is also on sale. $20 for CADGI members, $25 for everybody else, postpaid. All prices are postpaid, folks. And that's a $5 savings on Behold a Pale Horse. So, please take advantage of it. Remember, get your CADGI membership now. I know a lot of you regretted not having CADGI membership in the past. So, the membership is open now. Make sure you get your membership. Make sure that if you want your whole family, that you send $150, individual, $100. Make sure that you reserve your spot for the convention the first week of August, 1st through the 5th. Do it now so that you'll be insured to get in. Don't come here cold. And if you do anyway, the registration fee will be higher than if you register in advance. Like I said before, folks, I don't care whether you use your real name and address or not when you come to the convention. It doesn't make any difference to me whatsoever. You do whatever you think is best. And just remember this, though. There's only one list. And if you're not one of them, you're one of us. And us is on the list. If you think you're going to hide and escape the consequences of what is coming, you are sorely mistaken.
There's an old piano and they play it hot behind the green door. Don't know what they're doing, but they laugh a lot behind the green door. Wish they let me in so I could find out what's behind the green door. Not once try to tell them I've been there. Doors slammed. Hospitality's been there. Wonder just what's going on in there. Saw an eyeball peeping through a smoky cloud behind the green door. When the said Joe sent me, someone laughed out loud behind the green door. All I want to do is run a happy crowd behind the green door. Thank you. till the morning comes creeping. Green door, what's that secret you're keeping? Green door, what's that secret you're keeping? Green door!
Well, we continue, folks, with our series on mind control in America. It's important that you have pen and paper and that you take notes. And if you'd like to order this series, all tapes of the Hour of the Time are $7 for CAGI members, $9 for everybody else. $7 for CAGI or Intelligence Service members, $9 per tape for everyone else. You can order anything that's on sale, or your CAGI membership, or your Intelligence Service membership, or Tapes of the Hour of the Time, by writing to CAGI, C-A-J-I, until the end of the month, and then it will become the Intelligence Service. Post Office Box 1420. That's 1420. Sholo, spelled S-H-O-W-L-O-W, Arizona, 85901. That's Post Office Box 1420. Sholo, spelled S-H-O-W-L-O-W, Arizona, 85901. Make checks or money orders out to Annie, A-N-N-I-E, period. Don't call and say, Annie who, like a lot of you have been doing. Just follow directions, folks. Annie, A-N-N-I-E. Now, you learned a little bit last night, and we're going to continue. The United States government has conducted several types of mind control experiments, ladies and gentlemen, some of which were real-life experiences, such as those used on Little Augie, which we described last night, and the LSD experiments in the safe houses of San Francisco and Greenwich Village. Experiments on prisoners, such as the California Medical Facility at Vacaville. Many experiments were conducted in both mental hospitals and the Veterans Administration hospitals. After our soldiers were injured in war, they were further injured by our own Veterans Administration and government personnel in the intelligence community. This experimentation, folks, requires money, lots of it. And the United States government has funneled funds for drug experiments through different agencies, both overtly and covertly. One of the funding agencies to contribute to the experimentation is the Law Enforcement Assistance Administration, which was also known as LEAA. LEAA, a unit of the United States Justice Department and one of President Richard Nixon's favorite pet agencies. The Nixon administration, folks, was at one time putting together a program for detaining youngsters who showed a tendency toward violence in concentration camps. According to the Washington Post, the plan was authored by Dr. Arnold Hutchnecker. Health, Education, and Welfare Secretary Robert Finch was told by John Ehrlichman, Chief of Staff for the Nixon White House, to implement the program. He proposed the screening of children of 6 years of age for tendencies toward criminality. Now, those who failed these tests were to be destined to be sent to the camps. The program, fortunately, was never implemented. LEAA, or the Law Enforcement Assistance Administration, came into existence in 1968 with a huge budget to assist various United States law enforcement agencies, and its effectiveness, however, was not considered too great. After spending over $6 billion, the Federal Bureau of Investigation reports general crime rose 31%. And violent crime rose 50%, but little accountability was required of LEAA on how it spent its funds. And I can guarantee you, the funds were not spent to control crime. The LEAA's role in the behavior modification research began at a meeting held in 1970, ladies and gentlemen, in Colorado Springs. Attending that meeting were Richard Nixon, Attorney General John Mitchell, John Ehrlichman, H.R. Haldeman, and other White House staffers. They met with Dr. Bertram Brown, director for the National Institute of Mental Health, and forged a very close collaboration between LEAA and the Institute. LEAA was a product of the Justice Department, and the Institute was a product of health, education, and welfare. LEAA funded 350 projects involving medical procedures, behavior modification, and drugs for delinquency control. Money from the criminal justice system was being used to fund mental health projects and vice versa. Eventually, the leadership responsibility and control of the Institute began to deteriorate, and their scientists began to answer to LEAA alone. The National Institute of Mental Health went on to become one of the greatest supporters of behavior modification research. Throughout the 1960s, court calendars became blighted with lawsuits on the part of human guinea pigs who had been experimented upon in prisons and mental institutions. It was these lawsuits, ladies and gentlemen, which triggered the Senate Subcommittee on Constitutional Rights investigation headed by Senator Sam Irwin. The subcommittee's harrowing report was virtually ignored by the news media. 13 behavior modification programs were conducted by the Department of Defense. The Department of Labor had also conducted several experiments, as well as the National Science Foundation. The Veterans Administration, the VA, and VA hospitals were also deeply involved in behavior modification and mind control. Each one of these agencies, including LEAA and the Institute, were named in secret Central Intelligence Agency documents as those who provided research cover for the MKUltra program. Eventually, LEAA was using much of its budget to fund experiments, including aversive techniques and psychosurgery, which involved, in some cases, irreversible brain surgery on normal brain tissue for the purpose of changing or controlling behavior and or emotions. In Canada, many unsuspecting subjects of these experiments were given a prefrontal lobotomy through the nasal cavities. Senator Irwin questioned the head of LEAA concerning ethical standards of the behavior modification projects which LEAA had been funding. Irwin was extremely dubious about the idea of the government spending money on this kind of project without strict guidelines and reasonable research supervision in order to protect the human subjects. After Senator Irwin's denunciation of the funding policies, LEAA announced that it would no longer fund medical research into behavior modification and psychosurgery, despite the pledge by LEAA's director, Donald E. Santarelli. LEAA ended up funding 537 research projects dealing specifically with behavior modification. Now, there's strong evidence to indicate psychosurgery was still being used in prisons in the 1980s. And immediately after the funding announcement by LEAA, there were 50 psychosurgical operations at Atmore State Prison in Alabama. The inmates became virtual zombies. The operations, according to Dr. Swan of Fisk University, were done on black prisoners who were considered politically active. The Veterans Administration openly admitted that psychosurgery was a standard procedure for treatment and not used just in experiments. The VA hospitals in Durham, Long Beach, New York, Syracuse, and Minneapolis were known to employ these products on a regular basis. VA clients could typically be subject to these behavior alteration procedures against their will and without their knowledge. The Irwin Subcommittee concluded that the rights of VA clients had been violated. LEAA also subsidized the research and development of gadgets and techniques useful to behavior modification. Much of the technology, ladies and gentlemen, whose perfection, LEAA funded, had originally been developed and made operational for use in the Vietnam War. Companies like Bangor Punta Corporation and Walter Kidd and Company, through its subsidiary Globe Security System, adapted these devices to domestic use in the United States. ITT was another company that domesticated the warfare technology for potential use on United States citizens. RAND Corporation. Executive Paul Barron warned that the influx back to the United States of the Vietnam War surveillance gadgets alone, not to mention the behavior modification hardware, could bring about, quote, the most effective oppressive police state ever created, unquote. And one of the fascinating aspects of the scandals that plague the United States government is the fact that so often the same names appear from scandal to scandal to scandal. From the origins of Ronald Reagan's political career as governor of California, Dr. Earl Bryan and Edward Meese played key advisory roles. Dr. Bryan's name has been linked to the October Surprise and is a central figure in the government's theft of promised software from Inslaw. Bryan's role touches from the Cabazon Indian scandals to United Press International. He's one of those low-profile key figures and may have been involved in the murder of Danny Casolaro. And alas, his name appears again in the nation's behavior modification and mind control experiments. Dr. Bryan, you see, was Reagan's Secretary of Health when Reagan was governor. Dr. Bryan was an advocate of state subsidies for a research center for the study of violent behavior. The center was to begin operations by mid-1975, and its research was intended to shed light on why people murder or rape or hijack aircraft. The center, folks, was to be operated at the University of California at Los Angeles, UCLA, and its primary purpose, according to Dr. Bryan, was to unify scattered studies on antisocial violence and possibly even touch on socially tolerated violence, such as, yes, you guessed it, football, or war. Dr. Bryan sought $1.3 million for the center. Now, it certainly was possible, ladies and gentlemen, that prison inmates might be used as volunteer subjects at the center to discover the unknowns which triggered their violent behavior. But Dr. Bryan's quest for the center came at the same time Governor Reagan concluded his plans to phase the state of California out of the mental hospital business by 1982. The patients dumped on the streets became the nation's homeless. Reagan's plan is echoed by Governor Pete Wilson today to place the responsibility of rehabilitating young offenders squarely on the shoulders of local communities. Now remember, ladies and gentlemen, in the Soviet Union, they instituted the policy of community health care, that is, mental health care centers. Now, as the proposal became known more publicly, a swell of controversy surrounded it. In fact, it ended in a fiasco. The inspiration for the Violence Center came from three doctors in 1967, 5 years before Dr. Bryan and Governor Reagan unveiled their plans. Amidst urban rioting and civil protest, Doctors Sweet, Mark, and Irvin of Harvard, there's that place again that always pops up, Harvard, put forward the thesis that individuals who engage in civil disobedience possess defective or damaged brain cells. If this conclusion were applied to the American Revolution or the women's rights movement, a good portion of American society would be labeled as having brain damage. In a letter to the Journal of the American Medical Association, they stated, and I quote, that poverty, unemployment, slum housing, and inadequate education underlie the nation's urban riots is well known, but the obviousness of these causes may have blinded us to the more subtle role of other possible factors, including brain dysfunction in the rioters who engage in arson, sniping, and physical assault. There is evidence from several sources that brain dysfunction related to a focal lesion plays a significant role in the violent and assaultive behavior of thoroughly studied patients. Individuals with electroencephalographic abnormalities in the temporal region have been found to have a much greater frequency of behavioral abnormalities, such as poor impulse control, assaultiveness, and psychosis, than is present in people with a normal brainwave pattern, unquote. Wow! What a remarkable conclusion. Someone who has been proven to have abnormal brainwave patterns, signifying that they have abnormal functioning of their brain, are more apt to engage in unacceptable social behavior. I could have told them that with no experimentation, with no funding for research. Wonder why they didn't ask me. Soon after the publication of this statement in the journal, Dr. Irvin and Dr. Mark published their book called Violence and the Brain, which included the claim that there were as many as 10 million individuals in the United States, and I quote, who suffer from obvious brain disease, unquote. They argued that the data of their book provided a strong reason for starting a program of mass screening of Americans. Quote, from their book, our greatest danger no longer comes from famine or communicable disease. Our greatest danger lies in ourselves and in our fellow humans. We need to develop an early warning test of limbic brain function to detect those humans who have a low threshold for impulsive violence. Violence is a public health problem, and the major thrust of any program dealing with violence must be toward its prevention, unquote. The Law Enforcement Assistance Administration funded the doctors $108,000, and the National Institute of Mental Health kicked in another $500,000 under pressure from Congress. You see, they believed that psychosurgery would inevitably be performed in connection with the program, and that since it irreversibly impaired people's emotional and intellectual capacities, it could be used as an instrument of repression and social control, which was the true aim of all of this bullshit. The doctors wanted screening centers established throughout the nation, just like they had in the Soviet Union. In California, the publicity associated with the doctor's report aided in the development of the Center for the Study and Reduction of Violence. Both the state of California and the LEAA provided the funding. The center, folks, was to serve as a model for future facilities to be set up throughout the United States. The director of the Neuro Psychiatric Institute, that's the Neuro Psychiatric Institute, and I'm going to say it again, the Neuro Psychiatric Institute, and chairman of the Department of Psychiatry at UCLA, that's the University of California at Los Angeles, Dr. Louis Jolyon West, and I'm going to say that again, Dr. Louis Jolyon West was selected to run the center. You're going to hear a lot about Dr. West, for he is an infamous villain. Dr. West is alleged to have been a contract agent for the Central Intelligence Agency, who, as part of a network of doctors and scientists, gathered intelligence on hallucinogenic drugs, including LSD, for the super-secret MK Ultra program. Dr. Timothy Leary is another. Like Captain White, West conducted LSD experiments for the Central Intelligence Agency on unwitting citizens in the safe houses of San Francisco. He achieved notoriety for his injection of a massive dose of LSD into an elephant at the Oklahoma Zoo. The elephant died when Wes tried to revive it by administering a combination of drugs. Dr. Timothy Leary, in the meantime, addicted the entire youth of a generation known as the hippie movement, who were making waves with their ideas of living in a peaceful world. They had to be discredited. What better way to discredit a generation of young people than to addict them to drugs and at the same time use them as guinea pigs in mind control experimentation under MKUltra? Dr. West was further known as the psychiatrist who was called upon to examine Jack Ruby, Lee Harvey Oswald's assassin. It was on the basis of West's diagnosis that Ruby was compelled to be treated for mental disorders and put on happy pills. The West examination was ordered after Ruby began to say that he was part of a right-wing conspiracy to kill President John Kennedy. 2 years after the commencement of treatment for mental disorder, Ruby died of cancer in prison. After January the 11th, 1973, when Governor Reagan announced plans for the Violence Center, West wrote a letter to the then Director of Health for California, J. M. Stubblebein, and remember that name also. I'll be back after this pause. Ladies and gentlemen, the hour, the time is brought to you by Swiss America Trading. They specialize, ladies and gentlemen, in non-reportable, non-confiscatable hard assets. Now, that just means that while the laws remain like they are, and there's no declaration of martial law, no one can require you to report or can confiscate any of these assets that you buy under certain conditions that meet the requirements of the law. All of them are hard assets, gold, silver, precious metals in their various forms. The only thing in the history of the world that has proven to hold its value no matter what the economic situation does in the meantime. Bear in mind that under Declaration of Martial Law, anything can be confiscated, anything can be reportable, but if you buy it when it's not reportable and not confiscatable, and take the proper precautions for the future, you should be okay. Look around at your loved ones, folks. If you cannot guarantee them right now at this moment that you have assured their financial security in the future and the near future, then you must call our sponsors tonight. If you decide not to deal with our sponsor, you must deal with somebody We're concerned about you. I'm concerned about you. Swiss America Trading is concerned about you, and they'll tell you the same thing. If you don't take preventive measures through Swiss America Trading to protect your assets, please do it with someone. Call them now at 1-800-289-2646. That's 1-800-289-2646. Do it now, folks. You'll be glad that you did. A great weight will come off your shoulders. You won't have to worry about it. Your family won't have to worry about it. 1-800-289-2646. That's 1-800-289-2646. Do it now. You'll be glad that you did.
Well, don't talk to me about Wall Street Journal. Get all the facts before you start yours. Yeah! Arkansas woman gives birth to bride, groom, and entire wedding party.
Lordy, Lordy, I didn't know there's enough wedding cake to go around.
The National Supermarket Checkout Examiner. Minds that need examining want to know.
Now you can't keep your TV shows by fixing it in the day.
The letter read, Dear Stubb, I am in possession of confidential information that the Army is prepared to turn over Nike missile bases to state and local agencies for non-military purposes. They may look with special favor on health-related applications. Such a Nike missile base is located in the Santa Monica Mountains within a half hour's drive of the Neuropsychiatric Institute. It is accessible but relatively remote. The site is securely fenced and includes various buildings and improvements, making it suitable for prompt occupancy. If this site were made available to the Neuropsychiatric Institute as a research facility, perhaps initially as an adjunct to the new Center for the Prevention of Violence, we could put it to very good use. Comparative studies could be carried out there in an isolated but convenient location of experimental or model programs for the alteration of undesirable behavior. Such programs might include control of drug or alcohol abuse, modifications of chronic antisocial or impulsive aggressiveness, etc. The site could also accommodate conferences or retreats for instruction of selected groups of mental health-related professionals and of others. For example, law enforcement personnel, parole officers, special educators, for whom both demonstration and participation would be effective modes of instruction. My understanding is that a direct request by the governor or other appropriate officers of the state to the Secretary of Defense, or of course the President, could be most likely to produce prompt results. Some of the planned areas of study for the center included studies of violent individuals, experiments on prisoners from Vacaville and Atascadero and hyperkinetic children, experiments with violence-producing and violent-inhibiting drugs, hormonal aspects of passivity and aggressiveness in boys, studies to discover and compare norms of violence among various ethnic groups, studies of pre-delinquent children. It would also encourage law enforcement to keep computer files on pre-delinquent children, which would make possible the treatment of children before they became delinquents. The purpose of the Violence Center was not just research. The staff was to include sociologists, lawyers, police officers, clergymen, and probation officers. And with the backing of Ronald Reagan and Dr. Bryan, West had secured guarantees of prisoner volunteers from several California correctional institutions, including Vacaville. Vacaville and Atascadero were chosen as the primary sources for the human guinea pigs, and these institutions had established a reputation by that time of committing some of the worst atrocities in West Coast history. Some of the experimentations differed little from what the Nazis did in Germany before and during World War II. Dr. Earl Bryan, Governor Ronald Reagan's Secretary of Health, was adamant about his support for mind control centers in California. He felt the behavior modification plan of the violence control centers was important in the prevention of crime. The violence control center was actually the brainchild of William Harriman as part of a pacification plan for California. A pacification plan for California. A counterinsurgency expert for Systems Development Corporation and an advisor to Governor Reagan, Harriman worked with the Stand Research Institute, the RAND Corporation, and the Hoover Center on Violence. Harriman was also a Central Intelligence Agency agent who is now serving an 8-year prison sentence for his role in a CIA counterfeiting operation. Counterfeiting operation? Could that be the real source of all these supposed counterfeit $100 bills that they're using to justify a currency exchange? He was also directly linked with the Iran-Contra affair, according to government records and Harriman's own testimony. In 1970, ladies and gentlemen, Harriman worked with Colston Westbrook as his CIA control officer when Westbrook formed and implemented the Black Cultural Association at the Vacaville Medical Facility, a facility which in July experienced the death of 3 inmates who were forcibly subjected to behavior modification drugs. The Black Cultural Association was ostensibly an education program designed to instill black pride identity in prisons. The association was really a cover for an experimental behavior modification pilot project designed to test the feasibility of programming unstable prisoners to become more manageable and, as you will see, ladies and gentlemen, to program unstable prisoners to leave prison and commit terrible atrocities. Westbrook worked for the CIA in Vietnam as a psychological warfare expert and as an advisor to the Korean equivalent of the CIA and for the Lon Nol regime in Cambodia between 1966 and 1969. He was an advisor to the Vietnamese police special branch under the cover of working as an employee of Pacific Architects and Engineers. His firm, I say that facetiously, contracted the building of the interrogation torture centers in every province of South Vietnam as part of the CIA's Phoenix program, the same program that Lieutenant Colonel James Bobo Gritz brags that he was a part of. His bragging will do him in, for he is indeed a Trojan horse. The program, the Phoenix program, which James Bogreitz, by his own admission, was a part of, was centered around behavior modification experiments to learn how to extract information from prisoners of war, a direct violation of the Geneva Accords. Later was responsible for the murder of approximately 40,000 young patriotic South Vietnamese. We were told that they were killing the Viet Cong cadre. The Phoenix program actually paved the way for the invasion of South Vietnam by the North and the enslavement under communism of that nation. Now, folks, I'm not telling you that the nation as it existed when we were a part of its existence was a good nation. Just telling you the truth about what happened. Westbrooks, you better listen to this very carefully, ladies and gentlemen, because what I'm going to reveal to you now is going to send chills up your spine and make you so angry that you will not be able to sit still. So get a good grip on yourself and upon your chair and listen very carefully. For Westbrook's most prominent client at Vacaville Prison was Donald DeFries, who between 1967 and 1969 had worked for the Los Angeles Police Department's Public Disorder Intelligence Unit and later became the leader of the Symbionese Liberation Army. I'm going to tell you this again so that it will sink in. All of these random, unexplainable acts of violence, these groups that form and rage across the nation and then disappear, burned to a crisp in some bonfire set by government agents. I told you in my book where they came from, and many of you didn't believe me. Donald DeFries, between 1967 and 1969, worked for the Los Angeles Police Department's Public Disorder Intelligence Unit and later became the leader of the Symbionese Liberation Army. He was one of Westbrook's prize mind control subjects at Vacaville. Many authorities now believe that the Black Cultural Association at Vacaville was the seedling of the Symbionese Liberation Army. And I can tell you that it was, without any hesitation whatsoever. Westbrook, you see, is the one who designed the SLA logo, the cobra with seven heads, and has a distinct meaning in the mysteries, the mystery schools of ancient Babylon. And he also gave DeFries his African name of Sink. The Symbionese Liberation Army, ladies and gentlemen, was responsible for the assassination of Marcus Foster, superintendent of school in Oakland, and the kidnapping of Patty Hearst. If you research the background of all of these so-called wackos who take a weapon and gun down children in schoolyards or innocent people in a shopping mall, you will find that all of them have the same history. All of them participated in mind control experiments. Many of them are alumni of prisons in California. And I could go on and on and on. As a counterinsurgency consultant for Systems Development Corporation, which was a security firm, Herrmann told the Los Angeles Times, ladies and gentlemen, that a good computer intelligence system, quote, would separate out the activist bent on destroying the system, unquote, and then develop a master plan, quote, to win the hearts and minds of the people, end quote. The San Francisco-based Bay Guardian recently identified Herrmann as an international arms dealer working with Iran in 1980 and possibly involved in the October surprise. Herrmann is an English prison for counterfeiting. Again, there's that counterfeiting. Could this again be the source of the phony $100 bills that they claim is the reason for the currency exchange? Herrmann allegedly met with Iranian officials to ascertain whether the Iranians would trade arms for hostages held in Lebanon. Ask Ali Nor. Some of you stupid fool sheeple actually intend to elect Ali Nor, the traitor, to the United States Senate. The London Sunday Telegraph confirmed Herrmann's CIA connections, tracing them from 1976 to 1986. He also worked for the Federal Bureau of Investigation, and this information was revealed in his London trial. In the 1970s, Dr. Bryan and Harriman worked together under Governor Ronald Reagan on the Center for the Study and Reduction of Violence. And then a decade later, again worked under Reagan. Both men have been identified as working for Reagan with the Iranians and with Colonel Oliver North. The Violence Center, however, died an agonizing death. Despite the Irvin Senate Committee investigation and chastisement of mind control, the experiments continued. But when the Watergate scandal broke in the early 1970s, Washington suddenly felt it was too politically risky to continue to push for mind control centers. Top doctors began to withdraw from the proposal because they felt that there were not enough safeguards, and even the Law Enforcement Assistance Agency, which funded the program, backed out, stating the proposal showed, quote, little evidence of established researchability of the kind of level necessary for a study of this scope, end quote. All of this only because the spotlight of the public eye had fallen upon them. They were caught with their pants down, and as always, when the light is turned on, the cockroaches scrambled. Eventually, ladies and gentlemen, it became known that control of the Violence Center was not going to rest with the University of California, but instead with the Department of Corrections and other law enforcement officials. This information was released publicly by the Committee Opposed to Psychiatric Abuse of Prisoners. The disclosure of the letter resulted in the main backers of the program bowing out and the eventual demise of the center. Again, the cockroaches, in the blinding light, scattered and scrambled under the sink. Dr. Bryan's final public statement on the matter was that the decision to cut off funding represented a callous disregard for public safety. Though the center was not built, the mind control experiments, ladies and gentlemen, continue to this day. Some of them are known to many of you as the alien abduction phenomenon. Should I continue? The Central Intelligence Agency, folks, held two major interests in the use of LSD to alter normal behavior patterns. The first interest centered around obtaining information from prisoners of war and enemy agents in contravention of the Geneva Accords. The second was to deter the effectiveness of drugs used against the enemy on the battlefield. The MKUltra program was originally run, ladies and gentlemen, by a small number of people within the Central Intelligence Agency known as the Technical Services Staff, or TSS for short. Another CIA department, the Office of Security, also began its own testing program. Friction arose, and then infighting broke out when the Office of Security commenced to spy on TSS people after it was learned that LSD was being tested on unwitting, unknowing American citizens. Not only did the two branches disagree over the issue of testing the drug on the unwitting, they also disagreed over the issue of how the drug was actually to be used by the CIA. The Office of Security envisioned the drug as an interrogation weapon, but the TSS group thought the drug could be used to help destabilize another country. It could be slipped into the food or beverage of a public official in order to make him behave foolishly or oddly in public. Or it could be given to an entire generation of young people and discredit them forever. One CIA document reveals that LSD could be administered right before an official was to make a public speech and thus embarrass him and discredit him in the eyes of the public. Realizing that gaining information about the drug in real life situations was crucial to exploiting the drug to its fullest, TSS started conducting experiments on its own people. There was an extensive amount of self-experimentation. The Office of Security felt the TSS group was playing with fire, especially when it was learned that TSS was prepared to spike an annual office Christmas party punch with LSD. The Christmas party of the Central Intelligence Agency. LSD could produce serious insanity for periods of 8 to 18 hours and possibly longer. And you wonder, what has happened to the United States of America? Ladies and gentlemen, a good portion of this series on mind control is taken from a series of articles published in the Napa Sentinel in 1991. From the research of CAGI members, from the research of myself, William Cooper, from many reference books and sources, and I gave you a partial bibliography last night, and all during this series, we will be giving you further references. I hope that you don't have any trouble sleeping tonight. Good night, and God bless you all.
Well, it's a Friday evening when Jason Fuss gets finished eating. He'd excuse himself and hurry off to his weekly lodge on me. Till Ethel May, his wife, found out what no one could dispute, that that lodge hall was no lodge at all, but a house filled with you. I don't think I've ever seen a woman quite that mad before. She marched right down to that evil place and started kicking in the door. She yelled, "I know you're in there, Jake McCluskey, you low-down philandering liar." And then she stoked her down with kerosene, set the whole dang place on fire. The crowd had gathered up outside, but no one moved or spoke. Till a dripping voice from deep inside said, "Then that old house started shaking. Folks began to scream and shout. And the door flew off its hinge, and Lord, and folks came spewing out. Oh, flames of retribution could be seen for miles around. Yeah, there was so much confusion in a little Georgetown. That day that it was made of fresh, it burned the light all down. Judge Oliver Wendell Justice came out running for his life, but he turned and ran back in the flames when he caught sight of his wife. And self-ordained Elijah Payne, an evangelist of sorts, claimed he's down there saving souls in his 10-5 job short. Then out came the mayor and a banker we all knew, the police chief and the sheriff and the deputy or two. When they asked the sheriff what he was doing in that den of degradation, he said, "Well, honey, me and the boys just carrying out a little undercover investigation." And in the latest of the evening, clad in just their lingerie, we're crying, "We've lost everything, how we live, where we stay." And then the lawyer said, "I'll help you file for welfare so you get. And you can all stay out at my place till you can get back off your feet." A retribution could be seen for miles around. Yeah, and there was so much confusion in our little Georgetown. That day that it was nameless, it burned the light all down. Now where old Jake McCluskey is today is anybody's guess. He came smoking out that back door in a state of complete undress. Ran streaking off into the night, and no one's seen him since. But I'll always recall how he mooned us all as he cleared the backyard fence. Well, the flames, retribution could be seen for miles around. Yes, and there never was so much confusion in our little Georgetown. As the day that Ethel May McCluskey burned the light all down. The day that Ethel May McCluskey burned the light.